好。
Good morning, afternoon, evening, brunch time, lunch time, fourth attempt at the intro time, third Saturday in October time, does not mean that we're in mid-season form time. Whatever time of day it is, boys and girls, it's the right time for the Go Vols 24/7 podcast. Wes Rucker, Patrick Brown, Ryan Callahan, coming to you from Fort Rucker Studio. Hope everyone out there is having a good Thursday morning. Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening, Friday morning, Friday afternoon, Friday evening, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. I would say Saturday evening, but I don't think it's going to be that fun of a Saturday evening if I'm just going to be totally honest about that.
Well, if it's on Saturday evening, there's still going to be a couple hours for the game.
That's true.
That's true.
One of the benefits of podcasts, you can listen wherever, and also another benefit as opposed to live radio, you can redo things when you mess up.
That's true. And normally,
we're all struggling today.
I got to tell you, our hit rate for the intro is usually pretty solid. Like, we do one test, then boom, we're ready to go. Like, we come out of the box swinging. This took a fourth attempt because I kept either saying the wrong thing or hitting the wrong button or not having the volume turned up.
So basically, it was all your fault.
100%. 100%. There's no question about it. But, and I was thinking about this a second ago, that's sort of like Tennessee's season, right? Took about four or five tries. Eventually got the thing right. And in typical Tennessee fashion, Tennessee's reward for a really, really solid performance against Mississippi State that possibly could have turned the entire season around and still might. Tennessee's reward for that is a trip to the seventh circle in hell, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Bryant-Denny Stadium on Saturday night, which is going to be quite the viper pit. For the Vols, they're going to do a laser rave show thingy that looks kind of cool.
Well, that's why they've been complaining about not having any night games, because they haven't been able to show off the new lighting toys over at Bryant-Denny. I'm going to make sure that I'm either back getting a refill of a drink or in the bathroom or not paying attention when they do that, because
my
eyes are not ready for that nonsense.
Should I go ahead and play a card for Alabama and say, you know what, guys, some of us are stroke survivors here. I don't know if we need to be the and just to be clear, epilepsy did prevent my dad from going to Vietnam. So this might be kind of a thing that maybe this isn't a Team Rucker activity.
This is like a Tom Haverford like presentation.
Yeah,
the Parks
basically.
Department, where that's he asks, exactly is anybody? It's when he's trying to get some of his coworkers to invest in the snake hole lounge.
Yes.
He's like, does anybody have any blah, blah, blah with like flashing lights? And Jerry's like, I do both.
There you go.
And Tom's like, don't care, and does it anyway.
Yes.
that's what Alabama's doing.
That's what's going to happen. And
Ryan would know about this, but he's not seen the show.
Or Letterkenny. But that's
or
another topic for another day.
Working on it.
Unbelievable. Guys, here is the deal. Tennessee goes to play Alabama this weekend. I think, without making any major assumptions here, we have a pretty good idea of how this thing's going to go. You got to line up and play the game. That's why you go line up and play. Tennessee's going to put together a game plan and have every intention of going down there and winning a football game. And they should do that. They're Tennessee. They should never forfeit any game, you know, even in their own mind before it starts. But this matchup is really, really not a good one for Tennessee. Even Tennessee's wide receivers, which are almost always the best wide receiver group on the field, will not be the best wide receiver group on the field in this game, because Bama's wide receiver core is about as good as I've seen in college football in a while. They're really, really good.
Ryan, you're a Titans fan. Would you trade your top four receivers and your quarterback for what Alabama has right now?
No question. I mean, right now, is that even a tough call? You're switching to Ryan Tannehill from Mariota.
But how many NFL teams would be like, you know what? Yeah, I'd take
the former college wide receiver, Ryan Tannehill.
Well, it's not as many as Jeremy Pruitt might have suggested. Didn't he say earlier this week that a lot of NFL teams probably don't have? That's probably overstating it a little bit, but there are several.
I'd say 5 to 10.
Yeah.
5 to 10.
I agree with that.
And here's the deal. We know what Alabama's going to do at quarterback in this game, at least for the first half and maybe a drive or two. They're going to have two of the machine out there with his machine-like wide receivers. Tennessee, on the other hand, will go into this game, at least I think, and this is, no matter what Jeremy Pruitt says the rest of this week, I think we all know that there is a decision to make Saturday night with Brian Maurer. Now, whether you fall on the side of he should play if he's cleared, or be careful, just set him out a week, regardless, and we'll have that debate here in just one second, but regardless, I think we can all admit that Jeremy Pruitt does have a decision to make, and it is not necessarily a simple one.
Well, it may not even be his decision. I mean, if Maurer hasn't cleared the protocol for concussions, then there's no decision to make. He's not going to play.
That's very true. And we've seen him out there on the practice field. But, of course, quarterbacks don't get hit out there during practice ever. So he can take drop. He can do the whole drop back and throw the ball thing. We've seen him do that this week. So there have been no issues there. But, you know, taking live bullets is another thing. And we'll see if that decision is out there to be made. Now, for the sake of this debate, let's – I don't like to assume generally, but the only way this debate here quickly works is if we assume something. So we're going to do that.
You know what happens when you assume, though?
That's true. You lose to Alabama by 100 points. Let's assume that before the game starts Saturday, Brian Maurer is cleared to play, because we've all seen different kinds of concussions, and we did see that he was out there celebrating with his team after the game. He's been out there at practice. This is not looking like one of those deals, even with like Riley Locklear last week, where he was on the practice field just kind of looking like a dude who was still dazed and confused and just standing there and watching. Maurer's actually out there running around doing some things, and he jumped into the crowd Saturday with the students to celebrate. So he's, you know, not all concussions are equal, and he might be okay. If he's okay to play, do you play him in this game?
Yeah, you play him because he's your best quarterback and he's your best chance of winning the game. You're not going down there to cover the 34.5 point spread. You're not going down there to put up a good show. You're going down there to win the game. I know that seems far-fetched, and no one expects you to win the game, but nobody expected South Carolina to go to Georgia and win either. So, you know, you got to go out there and take your best hand and play your best lineup and play your best team and see what happens. I mean, you're going to need to score points against Alabama. They're averaging 51 a game, and you've been moving the ball a lot better with Brian Maurer the past two games than you have with Jarrett Garantano. That's not to say Garantano couldn't get the job done if they had to start him or had to play him a lot, but I think Maurer gives you more upside. He gives you more risk too, but you have to be able to take that risk when you see what he can do with his arm and with his legs.
Yeah, I think the thing, and Ryan, I'm going to set you up for this one, because, you know, I think it's no secret that Pat and I have already been on record pretty strongly about this, and there's only two ways that Pat and I go on something. Either we completely agree, like in unison, or just could not be farther apart from each other and will not concede any ground, and it's just not a pretty sight. So we've already had this discussion a little bit. I'll weigh in on my opinion in a minute, which obviously is not the same as Pat's. But Ryan, I think your opinion on this, I don't know that I know it as strongly. So I'm a guy who says I probably wouldn't play him. Pat's a guy who says he definitely would play him. Where are you on this?
We discussed this a little bit in our latest episode. I think you have to play him, because if it's an option, he still needs the experience. I think you can benefit from playing the number one team in the country. You know, maybe Tennessee's offense takes a step forward. This is an Alabama defense that's been giving up some points. Now, maybe, as Jeremy Pruitt pointed out in the SEC teleconference this week, maybe that's partly because Alabama's scoring so quickly, they're almost giving defenses...
Kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, putting their defense out there for more plays, giving other teams more chances to score. They're maybe keeping their defense tired, not having long drives and things like that. They're scoring so quickly sometimes. So maybe that's part of it. But whatever the reason, this is an Alabama team you could score a few points on. If you can get 17, 20 points against Alabama, I mean, not to say that you're happy with the loss no matter what, but if you can get some positives out of this game offensively, that's... You need that continuity, and you need the confidence going into a huge game against South Carolina next week. And Maurer doesn't need to be knocking off rust in that game, ideally. So I think you need to let him continue to play and learn things and get some confidence going into that game.
Here's the reason why I say I wouldn't play him. And it's not because – it's not just for the reasons that I think you're probably thinking. I think that the obvious is that why take the risk. But here's why I'm doubling down on that. It is because – I don't know that Brian Maurer knows a second way to play football. Maybe he'll learn, but this kid just does not throw the ball away. This kid does not slide. This kid does not try to run out of bounds. This kid tries to lower his shoulder and get through people or spin around them or jump over them. And twice now in 2 weeks, he has gotten the absolute crud knocked out of him because he doesn't really know how to manage his body in a game yet. And I don't, I'm looking at these guys, and I was just looking at pictures, and I know that Bama's defense on paper, at least a few positions, isn't quite what it was. But they talk about some of those inside linebackers, like their liabilities. Go look at those dudes. They're enormous. If either of those guys gets a really clean shot on Maurer, that's painful. And I think he's a guy that there will be games this season like Mississippi State where I think, you know, a guy like Garantano could win you that game. Like Vanderbilt, perhaps. Kentucky, perhaps. Maybe even South Carolina. But there's a couple other ones out there, and I'm looking at you, South Carolina, where, you know, or Missouri, certainly, where Tennessee's going to have to score some points to win the game. And I don't know that Garantano can go win you that game, whereas maybe Maurer could. And I just think you're going to need this kid, and I am a little bit worried about he started two games and finished neither of them, and I don't know that throwing him out there in Tuscaloosa is a great idea, because I think that until he learns a better way to play the game or smarter way, he might get the snot knocked out of him.
I mean, those are all fair concerns, but the bottom line is he's got to learn that. If he can't make it through a game against Alabama, you know, is he going to have much better luck against South Carolina, Kentucky, those types of teams? I don't know that you can say that for sure. So I think you've got to put him out there. He's got to learn the consequences of taking those kinds of hits, and maybe taking some hits from some guys that are as big and strong and fast as anybody in the country will help to hammer home that message. But I think he's learned some things clearly from these first couple games he started, and even playing in the Florida game, and he'll learn more as he goes along. And that's why I think there's so many benefits. I mean, there's just an inherent risk playing football. I don't think you can let that sway you from playing the guy that you think is your best player. And hey, maybe you even keep this game close and make it interesting.
I just think it's one thing to throw a kid into the deep end. It's another thing to throw a kid into the deep end when there's a bunch of sharks in there too. Like, I think at some point you're like, yeah, I don't know. But we'll see. That's why they go out there and play the game. I know exactly the way Pat feels on this. And
yeah, I'm not scared of Alabama.
I'm not saying,
but I'm also not playing in the game. So,
well, I mean, I think that there's a difference in being scared of something and saying, this is not the strategically sound decision right now.
Well, I mean, you can look at this as, you know, is this a game you're just trying to get past, or is this a game you're trying to not lose all the momentum that you gained from beating Mississippi State? I mean, you have your final five games are all winnable, except for maybe Missouri. I think the Tigers can score too much for maybe Tennessee. but
it's like, I may not be afraid of that.
But I mean, they have Latrell Bumpus is banged up. Do you hold him out? Jameer Johnson looks like he might be ready to play this week. Do you hold him out, or do you want to get him some snaps for South Carolina? You know,
I treat everyone else differently from the quarterback, though.
True. No, that's you're not wrong there. But you know, I just
think I'm not afraid. It's like
to let him go out there and continue to learn that he can't throw the ball, yeah, in double coverage and force throws in the end zone that get intercepted. And
it's like, if I'm on a golf course, things like that. It's like, I'm not afraid of that big water hazard there, right behind right next to the green. But that doesn't mean that it's smart for me to try to go at the pin, because I'm probably going to end up in that water. You know, I don't know.
The other thing is, you're trying to build a winning program, and you, if your team knows that there's a chance you could have played your starting quarterback and you didn't, what kind of message does that send when you're trying to make this a program that's competing with Alabama?
That's why eventually. I said, just take the sheet that says he's cleared and hide it in the drawer for a couple days.
Maybe is Maurer going to sit on that? Are you going to let him not even know?
He doesn't have to know.
Oh, okay.
We're still evaluating that.
But I think there's so much to gain. This is an opportunity for Tennessee, I think, in a way, because no one expects them to keep this game close. And when you go back and look at the last two coaches Tennessee had that showed any signs of life as a head coach, because Derek Dooley never really got there, but Lane Kiffin in his year.
Don't do it.
Just about had Alabama.
Don't say the next coach's name.
Just about had Alabama beaten. And in 2014, under
2015.
No, in 2014 too, Tennessee lost by only two touchdowns to Alabama at home, right? And then even
Derek Dooley, every game he played against Alabama was a game at halftime or right there.
But then they eventually ended up being blowouts.
Correct.
But I'm just saying, in 2014, Tennessee playing Alabama somewhat competitively was a sign that they were on the right track in year two under Butch
Jones. Wasn't that game like 27-0 at one point?
It might have been. I don't know. They came back and made the final score respectable was my point. And I could see this game maybe ending up like that. I mean, you just had Texas A&M score, what, 28 points against Alabama this past week?
Ole Miss scored 31.
Yeah.
With a quarterback who's running all over the place.
So even if the final score is 59-31, and even if half the points you score are in garbage time, how much could this team benefit from scoring 31 points against the number one team in the country? And how much could they learn from whatever mistakes or whatever come from this? I just think there's too many potential positives in a game like this. Maybe you even catch Alabama sleepwalking and you give them a bit of a game. I mean, there are so many things that could happen.
Or in an epileptic fit.
Yeah. And just taking the scared way out, essentially, and not playing him because you're worried about injury, or whatever the case, I just don't think that's a reason to sit out the guy that you think gives you the best chance to win.
Well, we'll go to break here, but before I do that, I'll just say quickly that I don't think, normally I'm very, very anti-coaching games out of fear. I think that you in general, I don't believe in that principle. But I think people who always do the same thing no matter what, whether it's one thing or another, are sort of fanatics. And I try to, there's always exceptions, I think. And this is one of those weeks where I maybe would make an exception, but that's okay. We don't have to agree, and we don't. And that's fine. It's 2-1, and I can live with that. We're going to step away for just 1 second, and if Grant were here, I imagine it would be 3-1, but that's okay. We will step away to break. We'll go pay some bills, do some products, add services, all those things, and be back and talk a little bit about Bama and Tennessee and what this weekend needs to be for the Vols. Hashtag ad.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Go Vols 24/7 podcast. Wes Rucker, Patrick Brown, Ryan Callahan coming to you from Fort Rucker Studio. Grant Ramey not with us today. He is he's got a little jet lag. What do you call the car version of jet lag?
Car lag
from going down there to SEC basketball media days. So we'll have some stuff on that too.
He also might have pop rock syndrome.
That's true. And I have a boy, do I have, it's not a surprise anymore because I'll let y'all know that I have a harmonica now that I'm carrying in my bag that every time Pop Rocks is played, I'm just going to start blowing on that harmonica until the station is changed. That's my protest. I would call it a silent protest, but it's not silent because it's a harmonica being played very, very loudly. Guys, Tennessee in this game, you go down there every game, right, to win the game. Herm Edwards, right, yeah. In theory. Unless you're Wes and you don't want to play your
top best 20 years on a state coach, Herm Edwards.
Yeah, unless you're Wes and you don't want to play your best quarterback because you don't want him to die.
Wes the quitter.
Basically. But in general, you go down there and play the game. However, Tennessee is, I haven't checked with Las Vegas recently. I'm guessing about 174-point underdog this weekend in Tuscaloosa. And so let's just say that there's a decent chance Tennessee doesn't win this football game. What does Tennessee need to do this weekend to make sure that all the momentum from last week's win doesn't just get completely thrown down the drain?
Well, from a coaching staff standpoint, you want to see you want Alabama to make you look bad, if that makes sense. You want to play solid and then be like, okay, well, they're just really good.
So they just have more talent.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of been the story in Georgia in the past two games against Georgia where that was the difference in the game. I don't think Tennessee was overwhelmingly outcoached in either of the two Georgia games. But you don't want to make a bunch of mistakes. You don't want to have a bunch of penalties. You don't want to you don't want to have five turnovers or anything like that. You want to play as clean as you can and then see what happens. I do think Tennessee needs to take some risks in this game. I would be disappointed if there's not at least one onside kick.
Or a couple trick plays, just do
because,
something.
Because, I mean, if Alabama's going to score every possession anyway, why not, just make them drive 50 yards to 80, you'll get the ball back quicker. maybe you'll tire their defense out more. You know, so
I would use trick plays, but not your best trick plays, because I would save those for games where you might sneak one off. But try some stuff.
And you just want to see you want to see more signs of life. You know, we saw signs of life against Georgia. Obviously, they beat Mississippi State, so there's signs of more life. And the thing is that they may show signs of life and still lose by 40 points, just because that's how good Alabama is right now, and that's how scary this matchup is for Tennessee, because defensively, this is the dilemma of the utmost, because they can't, you know, they're not going to be able to guard Alabama's wide receivers one-on-one. Nobody has. Nobody probably will. Maybe LSU, we'll see. Tennessee probably can't stop the run or get any sort of pressure on Tua unless they commit more people to the box or commit more people to rushing. So they're just going to have to sort of pick their poison and hope they can pick the right spots when to pressure and when to play coverage, and hope that they, you know, maybe Tua has an off night. Maybe, you know, it'll only be like 3 o'clock Hawaiian time, so he probably will be fine. But
he did throw an interception last week, so he's so overrated.
Well, I'll just hand the Heisman to Joe Burrow then. I mean, but offensively, I think you just need to try to, you know, you need to try to shorten the game. I mean, if you can, and I think you can find some holes. You know, I think you need to get the tight ends involved. You know, Alabama's got two really inexperienced linebackers that probably, much like Tennessee's linebackers, have been a little bit of a liability in coverage. So try to get them one-on-one with the backs out of the backfield. You know, run guys out, you know, run the receivers down the field, make some space and see if you can't, you know, hit some easy plays there, and then, you know, try to hit some big plays. It's, you know, you got nothing to lose, so why not throw the ball down the field a bunch, see what happens.
Go ahead, Ryan. I was just going to say, this to me as a coach would be a fun game in a way to coach in, because you can
it's YOLO.
Yeah, you just try everything. I mean, why not? Everything you do that's a positive in this game that surprises people is a win for you.
Run the oop-de-oop.
And if you lose six...
I'd get the lead and then call timeout.
Yeah, I mean, if
let it last longer.
If you go up six, or if you lose 63-7, it doesn't matter. That's what people expected. So just go out with everything you got, whatever's in the playbook. And I would take chances early on, like you're saying, Patrick. If look at what happened in the Georgia game, Tennessee led that game early in the second quarter and made it a game until halftime. And just that alone, even though the final score was 43-14, was enough for people to be talking. Whoa, Tennessee was leading Georgia. I mean, it's a small victory, but it's a victory when you're rebuilding. So if Tennessee could have something similar, say you go out and you score on the opening drive and then you get an onside kick and you add another field goal and you're up 10-0 on Alabama.
Do you take all three timeouts in that situation?
Yeah. For the first, you know, for the 5 minutes that was true, you'd have
take all three timeouts and go ahead and just smoke a cigar.
Yeah.
The closest it's going to be.
The Twitter world would be buzzing, you know, all that stuff.
You just dipped into the waters of what I'm going to suggest to do, but go ahead.
Yeah. But anything like that you can pull off in this game, no matter what the final score is going to be a win. Even if it's Brian Maurer throwing for, and this goes back to the first segment, I guess, but if Maurer threw for 300 yards in this game, even if he threw three picks, so what? You know, anything like that's tangible progress that shows your offense or your team or your defense headed in the right direction is a win for you. So just throw some stuff at the wall, you know, try some out-of-the-box things and see what happens.
I've said this before. Tennessee, the amount of unsmoked cigars that Tennessee has from the past several years of this rivalry, that's a pretty large box. And if I'm Tennessee, I have a checklist of things to do. The first thing I would do is when you walk into the stadium before the game starts, walk in with your cigars lit. That's the first thing, because I think you're sending Alabama a message that says, we're going to beat you today. Then I would go promptly to
this
midfield.
This is very much anti what you just said about not playing Maurer, yes, because you'd be like, don't poke the bear.
You're getting these two things confused.
Wouldn't they get ripped for using the celebratory cigars?
Just hold on a second. It gets better. Then you walk into the stadium promptly, and you start stepping on the A repeatedly.
Oh, my goodness.
Hold on, I'm not done. To a point
talking
where...
about going Devin Bush on the Spartan head? Is that what you're talking
about?
Yes,
I would walk in smoking the victory cigars. I would stomp on the A enough to where Alabama comes over and fights you. Okay, so then you go into the beginning of the game. Every single person on the field is one unsportsmanlike away from being ejected, right?
Then you just go at Tua. You just try to make him mad.
Then
talk trash after every play.
I take every walk-on that I can put out there, and I put them out there for special teams, offense, and defense, and I pick fights. after every snap for the first couple plays of the game.
You can't bring too many walk-ons because it's a 70-man roster. But
as many as you can bring, right? Whoever you can spare. Even if you're, like, let's say you're dinged up a little bit and, like, you can't play, but, like, you know, you can fight if you need to. You go out there, and then you start fighting with them, and you try to get as many of their best players as you can ejected. Because you're going to lose some of your guys, too, and you're going to have to do that trade. You're going to have to do the trade. And you don't have a lot of depth, so that's going to hurt. But if you think about how many guys Tennessee really can play right now who would actually be effective, there's some dead weight at the end of that travel roster. Let's just call it what it is.
First of all, this is a hockey strategy, and it never works.
Because how many times has it been tried in football?
When the goon is out there trying to pick a fight with your best center, the center ignores him. It's simple strategy. So you would tell your best players, hey, look, there's a walk-on out there. Don't get in a fight with him.
So now what's going to happen?
Okay, give
me the worst-case scenario here. You make Alabama mad, and they beat you by 80 points. Who cares? You know what the difference is between losing by 40 points and 80 points? Nothing. There is literally zero difference between losing between 40 points and 80 points. So it doesn't matter.
To recap, Patrick and I said, take some chances, do some wild things. It doesn't matter. You're going to lose anyway, and no one expects you to win.
Wes is saying, muck up the game to the nth degree.
Wes is saying, go to midfield and take a dump on the history of the game and the rivalry.
Yes. Do you want to give yourself a chance by doing what I'm suggesting? You have a 0.1% chance of winning the game. However, if you don't do that, I think you have even less a percentage of chance of winning the game because, you know, now the only reason I can tell you why it wouldn't happen, one, because actually Jeremy Pruitt does have respect for this series and would never coach a game like that.
Yes.
Also, the fact of the matter is,
gave him his break into college coaching
and a place that whatever people think about him, the place is near and dear to his heart. He played ball there. He coached there. Yes. You know, it is what it is.
He still refers to Nick Saban as coach. Yes. I mean, that's...
Yes, and I think a lot of those guys do. But in all seriousness, I think if you're Tennessee, I would not use, like, your best trick plays. So I think there might be games down the road where you need those. But let's say if you're Jim Chaney and you've had some ideas about, I wonder what would happen if I ever tried this in a game. Go ahead and try it. Why not? If you're Jeremy Pruitt and you thought, you know what, I've always thought for years that this really funky defensive formation could give some people some problems, but it also could blow up in my face completely. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out there and try it this game. I'm going to see how that goes.
Wildcat package with Juwan Jennings?
Just anything. Anything you've got that you think, you know what, this might not be the best stuff, but it's always been in the back of my mind. Try some of that stuff.
I would like to see them for the first half do the old every time we onside kick and we don't punt.
Yeah, like the Arkansas high school team.
I mean, yeah, like Alabama's going to, you know, they're going to put up probably 50 points a game, you know, 50 points in this game anyway.
What if Jeremy Pruitt was telling the truth when he answered Wes's question earlier this week about his game plan?
You mean the one that he intentionally broke into a two-part question even though it wasn't so he could give that answer?
Yes.
It was well played.
I'll have mad respect for him if for like the first half they just like don't punt.
Yeah.
They're going for it on 4th and 20 at their own 15-yard line.
That's called a Hal Mummy.
What if they win the toss, defer, and then try an onside kick to start the game?
YOLO. I mean,
if you win the toss, say we want the ball and we're going
to
score.
You're probably going to get scored on anyway, so...
No, I'm saying they choose to kick off first so that they can do that.
You know what they're doing at that point? They're just hurting Alabama's offensive numbers is all they're doing. Be like, you think you're going to get 1,000 yards in this game? Try again.
We're going to keep Tua from winning the Heisman because his five scoring drives are going to be 40 yards.
Try again. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, we've had some fun with this segment, but I think if you're Tennessee and you keep this anything within 30 points, you've probably done a pretty decent job. And I know people don't want to hear that. They're probably driving off the road in anger right now. But, guys, it's just not the same. I mean, I will say, though, that Bama and Georgia is much closer to an even parity from a pure talent standpoint. Now, Tua is a difference maker, and Bama's receivers are a billion times better. But there are some places where I think Georgia might even have more talent than Bama does, or at least close.
Mm-hmm.
A couple spots. And so I think that...
The sideline is not one of them, for the record.
You know what, though? To counter everything...
But my point is, Tennessee did some good things against Georgia, and it's not like the difference between Bama and Georgia is a million points. It's, you know, it probably isn't.
To counter everything you just said, though, let's look at what Alabama's actually done in SEC play so far. They've beat South Carolina 47-23. They beat Ole Miss 59-31. And they beat Texas A&M 47-28. So every team they've played in SEC play has scored 23 points, and only one of them has allowed Alabama to score 50 points. Now, maybe they're taking the foot off the gas way early.
They 100% are.
And maybe that's a big factor in that. Who knows? And maybe Nick Saban does the same thing here. But I'm not telling anybody what they should do with their money, but I'm taking the points in this game. I'll go ahead and tell you what my pick is. I think Tennessee covers, and I don't really have much doubt about it, because I think Tennessee, if they play Maurer, can score some points, and I think they'll do things to shorten the game. And I think Alabama takes their foot off the gas pretty early, and the final score probably ends up in the low 50s for Alabama, I would say, at best.
Maurer's definitely a boom or bust guy in this game, because there's a chance that he could give you more points on the board. There's also a chance he could throw about three pick sixes in this game. So, you know,
that's true.
I mean, he's going to give and he's going to take away. And that actually lends itself to y'all's argument about playing him to let him make the mistakes. But I would say that if you don't play him in this game, you can tell your team, yeah, that was really bad. But guess what, guys? Maurer didn't even play.
I mean, look,
Maurer's going to be back now. Everything's going to be fine.
I mean, look at that South Carolina score. We didn't even think at that time South Carolina was very good. This was way before they beat Georgia. 47-23. You think Tennessee wouldn't take some confidence from only losing 47-23, as crazy as that sounds?
I never really thought Carolina was bad. I just thought Carolina had the ridiculous schedule that Tennessee's had at times in the past few years.
I mean, it's
a tough schedule.
Yeah, I didn't think they were good enough that was a decent game by Alabama for them to have only won 47-23. Like, they kind of messed around in that one and let South Carolina, you know, hang around at least a little bit. So I don't know. When I see those results so far, Ole Miss isn't very good and scored 31. You just play it straight up probably, and you've got a chance to hang around and, you know, at least do some positive things.
I think it's a pretty good place to leave that discussion, guys. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to step away. We're going to come back. We're going to take your questions as we always do, or almost always do, at the tail end of the Thursday morning podcast. So we're going to go pay some bills. Ads, products, services, all those fun things, in-house ads. Be back in just 1 second. Hashtag ad.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Welcome back to the Go Vols 24/7 podcast, brought to you by whatever products and services you just either did or did not hear momentarily. You can't say momentarily ago, a moment ago. Man, we are in bad form, aren't we?
Speak for yourself.
I am in bad form, aren't I? Just unacceptable. Unacceptable. Guys, as always, we got a bunch of questions to get to this week. We're keeping these just to the Go Vols 24/7 checkerboard this week.
And we need to go rapid fire.
First question, as always, you know what,
I've got this pulled up, so I'm ready to go for you, Haynes.
Regardless, at the end of this year, Haynes, we're gonna have to send you when we make our first friend of the pod t-shirt, you're gonna have to get one, because you just need to go ahead and send us a message with your t-shirt size. We're gonna try to get you hooked up whenever we get this stuff made. So question, as always, that he always has in this thread, what is the average, although this week he actually had a typo, what is the average of their offensive line? I guess he means age, size.
Alabama starts, what do you want? Do you want age or size or both?
Both.
Right tackle, Jedrick Wills, 320-pound junior. Looks like they're going to start Deontay Brown, probably at right guard. He's 338, and he's a redshirt junior.
Big boy.
Landon Dickerson, who will be a familiar name to some Tennessee fans. I believe is their starting center now. He just plays nasty, apparently. 6'6", 308, redshirt junior. Left guard, Evan Neal, 360-pounder, but he's a freshman. Wasn't he a 5-star, Ryan? Evan Neal?
He was, yeah.
There you go.
They have a center that's like 5 inches taller than their quarterback. That's
weird. And then left tackle is Alex Leatherwood, who's 6'6", 310, junior. So what is that, 4 juniors and a freshman?
Yeah. So they're old and big and good. Right.
Yeah, there's some big dudes up front.
If you want to feel good, though, Tennessee played, I think, a pretty decent offensive line last week. This does not need to be lost in the shuffle. Mississippi State's offensive... Let me finish.
No.
We need
to go
huge.
Rapid fire.
They're
this
huge.
Isn't rapid fire.
Pat, Mississippi State's offensive line has a bunch of upperclassmen, and they're incredibly large mammals. And they had the number one rusher in the SEC. So let's not completely discount the fact that Tennessee played pretty well defensively, but it's a completely different world this week. Let's see here. Question from Titan Blue Govals. Not that this has happened recently, but what brand cigars does the staff keep on stock just in case Tennessee beats Alabama? Is it nice cigars like a Cohiba or Maduro, or is it like Backwoods and Philly Blunts?
That's a great question.
I would imagine that it's probably a mid-grade cigar. I don't think it's a Cohiba, and I love a good cigar, so I actually love Cohibas and Maduros. They're both great brands, obviously, but yeah, I don't think they're anything great like a Cuban or anything like that. Maybe a solid mid-range like Dominican, something like that.
Are you done?
Something like that.
Did you mean Minican?
Minican. Dominican.
I know. It was a Letterkenny reference.
Minican.
Minican. Polko.
Minican. Polko.
Coon.
Down Polko. Down Polko. If you're not watching Letterkenny, by the way, you absolutely should. And again, Hulu, you should be giving us money for all these shout-outs about the best show on television right now. Anybody else have any thoughts on the cigar question?
Nope. Next.
I will say that if you have a humidor, keep it around 70.
Or not.
Keep it around the humidity around 70.
That's, I need to check around.
They're good.
Some people in the program who would know that, maybe they'll tell us something.
It'd be really fun if they're Philly Blunts. Question, Polly Rules. What do you think of the lights that Bama and UGA had installed? Personally, I'm not a fan, and it's not sour grapes. I wouldn't like them if they were installed in Neyland.
I think they're stupid, and I want to avoid them on Saturday night if I can.
They can be fun if you use them the right way, but...
Haynes has another great question coming up. Let's just get to that one. Who cares? Lights are stupid.
Craig Fitzgerald. First off, it's also in all caps, which is the best way to answer to ask questions, I think. Craig Fitzgerald and his staffers versus Juwan Jennings, Roman Harrison, Elijah Simmons, and Brian Maurer. Who would win in hand-to-hand combat? So this is, what are we talking? When his staff, we're talking about the five full-timers or whatever? The six-man full-time?
I think he picked one player for every staffer. So it's a bunch of one-on-ones. Give me the staff because they're grown men. Like actual grown adult men.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Maurer's a tough kid, but, you know, I don't know that you'd...
And they got Byron Derrido used to play defensive line at South Carolina, so he'd be the guy you'd match with Simmons.
Yeah.
I'm taking the staff.
It breaks my heart to say that a team with Elijah Simmons would ever lose at anything.
And I think Shaq Wilson also played at South Carolina, so...
I mean, if you...
Put him up with Harrison, Fitz would have to take Juwan himself.
If they got in a singing contest, though, the team with Simmons on it wins.
If you've heard some of the old stories about Craig Fitzgerald, just, you know, he's more of an advantage than people might be thinking. Let's put it
that way. He's full insane. Like, he is very high on the list of human beings I would not want to mess with. Very high on that list.
I would agree. That's a tough one just because the young guys, the big guys, you know, that gives you, you get that youthful advantage maybe, but still some big, mean men on that staff. I'm taking the staff.
Question from Loud Noises, which is, again, one of our better usernames on GoVols247's checkerboard. Going into the season, which would you have said would be more likely, Tennessee losing to Georgia State or Bama losing to Tennessee?
Wow, that's a good one.
You want my honest answer? I would have said the first, but I wouldn't have picked either one.
Yes. So I was thinking the same thing. I think the odds of Tennessee beating Alabama are like, what does the FPI say, 3% or something like that?
At Bryant-Denny Stadium, I just don't.
Yeah.
I think probably Georgia State.
The odds of Tennessee losing to Georgia State were probably single digits too, but probably higher than 3 or whatever.
I think FPI had it at 3.1%, which is about a half a percent higher than they give Tennessee's chances on Saturday.
Good.
There you go.
Good. But that is, well, no, never mind.
Good question from
Steve. I was going to say something dumb.
It's close, but I think slight edge to Georgia State.
You can say dumb things all the time. I do it just for fun. Here we go. CPA Vol, good question. Ryan and Grant, who actually Grant's not here.
Sorry.
But maybe he meant Pat since you're here. Ryan and Pat, how did y'all come to love the Cardinals and the Braves? And Wes, how did you come to love the Taliban?
Handle yours first, Wes.
I grew up, and there were only a couple teams you could watch on TV every single day, and one of them was the Chicago Cubs, and they were played day games, and they were on during the day, so I, you know, got to watch them. Andre Dawson was like my favorite player ever, and then I was told that my great uncle was a player and manager for the Cubs, the last person to serve as both a player and manager for the Cubs at the same time, and that got me excited. His name was Robert Moranville. I have one of his cards and signatures up there on the wall, and that was that did it for me. I was a Cub for life at that point.
Let the record show he spent 1 year with the Cubs and 2 years with the Cardinals.
He was never a player/manager.
Okay.
He also won a World Series with the Cardinals. After he got fired from the Cubs for drinking too much.
So you should be a Cardinals fan is what you're saying.
No, I would never.
I was probably more of a Red Sox fan when I was little because of my dad, but you know the Braves are always on. They were always winning. Lately, I've gotten into the Braves because a couple of my friends have been big Braves fan, and I know some people that work for him. So
you grew up in Memphis. Weren't the Cardinals always on TV?
No, but I went to a bunch of Memphis Redbirds games where they were, that's the AAA affiliate. So Pat
grew up in a nice Christian family. They weren't allowed to watch Satan on television.
There you go. That's another explanation, Ryan.
Mine's less simple than that, but it's kind of,
you're a bad person. Is that
no? It's two things. One, I always kind of like the Cardinals a little bit. My grandfather talked a lot about like Willie McGee and some of those guys from the 80s when I was growing up. And then the first place we went to a game was Busch Stadium when I was like 4. I actually have, I think at the time I got like a stuffed Fred Bird mascot that I wanted at the game because I was 4 and stupid. So anyway, and then years later, I kind of got out of baseball for a few years. The strike sort of soured me on it. And then, but I was a big
A's. Oh, so you're one of those losers.
Yeah. So I was a big A's fan and Mark McGwire fan before the strike, though. And like, so my only interest in baseball for a couple years was McGwire being a great power hitter. And then he gets traded to St. Louis. So it made it really easy for me to say, hey, I never got to see the A's play because they're on the other side of the country for me growing up. And here are the Cardinals, and they're a team I've always kind of liked. So this is easy. So
yeah, my dad's a big Cincinnati Reds fan, and so he was really crushed when I became a Cubs fan when I was a kid. And I heard the stuff about my mom's, because my mom's side of the family is the Cubs side of the family. And but then he took me to games every single summer at Old Riverfront. And there was one game where George Bell hit 3 home runs in the first inning for the Cubs. And even though my dad got me like Chris Sabo autograph after the game and like Eric Davis and a bunch of those guys, I was still like, Dad, you know, I love the Cubs, right? So I think that broke his heart and he's my hero. So I hated to do that. But
and then Mark McGwire turned out to be a huge cheater. So that was always fun to look back on.
Unlike Sammy Sosa, who's totally innocent.
Yeah.
Question from Polly Rules. How disappointed are y'all that Tennessee doesn't line up with a fullback every play? Great question. Very, very disappointed.
They do have a fullback. He's a de facto fullback. His name is Austin Pope. He lines up everywhere. Because he's versatile. That's agile.
But he doesn't line up just as a total, like, classic fullback.
That's today's game, though, man. It's crazy.
You know, last season, it didn't work out for them.
Congratulations to Polly Rules to get West to go off on fullback.
The one time last season that Tennessee ran one of those greatest plays,
Yeah, they had a fullback against Georgia again on 3rd-and-1 and got stuffed.
They also had one against Florida, and they got a first down.
For next week's podcast questions thread, we just need everyone to stuff the ballot box with questions aimed at triggering West.
The greatest play in all of football is a play action weak side pass to the fullback. It has never been covered. It never will. It is a guaranteed great play. Although Tennessee doesn't throw swing passes great, so maybe not in this case. But in general, that's one that I would do. Question for Polly Rules. How would y'all try to improve this team in the offseason?
Deer antler spray and more good players.
Yeah.
So lots of recruiting.
recruiting.
And some deer antler spray.
Yeah. Recruiting, steroids. That's
not, the spray is not steroids, it's 2 different things.
It's just degrees of enhancer there. They're both enhancers, you know? In all seriousness, Tennessee is finally starting to get a little bit better play up front, which is such a key to the entire thing. But what Tennessee needs badly, and I mean badly, is it just needs more good players to build a culture, to build some depth, and to have some like-minded guys who kind of all move in the same direction. They're getting closer to that, but they need more bodies, and it's hard to go from where Tennessee is now to where Tennessee wants to be unless you have really good players pushing each other to be the best every day. That's the only way you gain ground.
They need time and talent. You got to have time for these guys to develop, the ones that are on the roster who can help you compete in the SEC, and then you got to have more players like them. And there aren't enough of those guys, so another offseason in the strength and conditioning program helps a lot. I think that'll make a difference, but yeah, you need more talent too.
Talent, and deer antler spray.
I'm gonna give you the 3 T's: time, talent, and steroids.
The spray
or the deer antler spray. Let's see here.
Kyle Matheny has a good question.
Wait, I'm skipping a couple here.
Before that one, Rob Munt.
Okay, we need to be quick.
We answered Rob's in the podcast. You wanted to know what happened to make this game successful for the Vols.
There you go. A question from Kyle Matheny. Why you such a chump? I don't know who that was.
And it ended with GBO. Let's assume it was directed at you, Wes.
Why are you such a chump?
I think a lot of people would love to know that. I don't really know why. I just get up and I do things that I think make sense, which tend to get me in trouble. Loud noises. How many 10-win seasons without a natty would it take to get Kirby fired? 10-win seasons are a lot. Maybe like 8 or 9 before it became a problem.
Fewer than it took them to make a move on Mark Richt.
Oh, I think a lot because, well, it depends on what those 10-win seasons are.
It took them 15 years for Mark Richt, so Kirby's got plenty of time.
If you're winning 12 games and going to the playoff and just not winning at all, that's one thing. If you're not winning your division and winning 10 games, then it's a problem. I think it would take three or four of those types of seasons. I think it would take a lot of seasons of making the playoff and winning SEC championships and still not winning national titles for it to be a huge issue. And Kirby Smart's a Georgia guy too, so I think they're going to give him time.
Let's see here. A question from J.A. I think it's more of a comment than a question. Will any of you guys that suggested, jokingly or otherwise, that Tennessee should sit Maurer against Bama, please audibly slap yourself on the back of the head?
Thank you.
A lot has been made of this.
Back of the hand.
Back of the hand, yeah.
Wes, just go ahead and do it.
Can't even read. Like this, like.
There you go.
A lot has been made about this culture of losing in the program, so suggesting that we should sit Maurer because he doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell of beating Bama is indicative of that very culture. For shame.
Well said.
I still am trying to play the long game here. CPA Vol, does Georgia beat South Carolina with Jim Chaney as OC?
Yes.
Considering the game could have gone either way anyway, sure. Why not?
I think the Georgia fans who were hard on Jim Chaney are foolish, but I think the Tennessee fans who were hard on Jim Chaney are foolish. I think he's one of the best, most proven offensive coordinators out there with a CV that puts a lot of others to shame. Or should I say to shame? Between the four of you, who wins in a turnip eating contest?
Wes, because you actually you are from a farm. I don't even like turnips.
Nope.
I can't say I love turnips, but if it's a contest, I'll do anything I can to win it. Which running back should, this is from Duckvall ATL03, which running back should get the most carries in this game? Are you saying should or will? Because if it should.
Should.
If it should, I'm going to say Ty Chandler. If it's will, I think it's Tim Jordan.
Really? Okay. I think it's Chandler every game. I think he's the only home run hitter in your backfield. Feed him consistently. For some reason, he's had four games this season in the first six, I believe, that he's had 10 or fewer carries. I think that needs to change. I think Tennessee needs to make sure he gets opportunities and he's one of the few guys who can turn a 4-yard play into a 40-yard play. So
yeah, I would get Chandler any game where he doesn't have 15 touches is a game where I think they've done their job poorly.
Yeah,
any game where he's healthy and doesn't get 15 touches is a mistake.
And you know what? That we talked all offseason about him getting the ball in the passing game, and we haven't seen that either. They need to, I think, force it into his hands a little bit more the second half.
Two questions left. One from Poly Rules. If you could change one rule in college football, what would it be?
Oh man.
Maybe turn pass interference into a spot foul as opposed to 15-yard penalty, the NFL.
That would be my one rule change on the field. My one rule change off the field was everybody gets a free one-time transfer. That would be my other rule.
Those are both pretty good ones.
Until coaches are allowed, coaches are still allowed to move wherever they want. Players should be given the same freedom at least once in their career.
I would allow anything about instant replay, targeting, any of that stuff. That always seems to get people triggered. That's fair. I would lean toward maybe allowing review on more penalties. I think that's still an interesting.
Boy, that's a good point, Ron. Here's a really good question. We'll wrap it up on this one. Gaffney VFL 89. Who has the better chance of being a freshman All-American at the end of the season, Wanya Morris or Hank T?
Hank T. I think he's going to be way up there because he's going to probably have close to 100 tackles, and any freshman that can do that is going to be in consideration for a lot of awards. But there are fewer offensive linemen who play as true freshmen, so maybe that gives Morris a good chance too.
Yeah, I'll say Wanya just based on that and the fact that most people that vote on these things aren't really studying much film, and so they'll just see, hey, this guy started 11 or 10, 11, 12 games.
Well,
he's going to be the
tackle?
Guy.
Wow.
I just thought of this too. Alabama's got two freshman linebackers starting this year. Okay, I changed my answer. It's Wanya Morris because not many offensive linemen start as true freshmen, which is why Trey Smith was a shoe-in as a freshman All-American when he played 2 years ago.
I might go Wanya just because there's a lot of people who won't want to try to spell say To'o To'o. but no, in all seriousness, I think either one could do it. I think they'll both be freshman All-SEC, and I think that either one of them has a chance to be an All-American. Guys, thanks for tuning in. We will be back Monday unless something happens before then. That's kind of crazy, so thanks for tuning in. As always, you can find all of us on social media. I'm Wes Rucker 24/7 on Twitter. Patrick Brown's P Brown 24/7 on Twitter. Ryan Callahan's Ryan Callahan 24/7 on Twitter. And Grant Ramey's Grant Ramey on Twitter. You can also find all of us on Twitter at twitter.com/govols247 or facebook.com/govols247. We have a good Facebook page. Grant does a great job with that. Go check that out for sure. Or if you want to drink water straight from the hose, go to govols247.com, the best site, period, dot, end of sentence. That covers Tennessee athletics. You can find all of our stuff there all the time. It's like this podcast, but all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by and large. That's why we call it that. It's not just a name. as Wayne's World would say, it's not just a clever name, right?
It's a way of life.
It's a way of life. And now you can get a full year subscription for 30% off. So go do that. Pat, you got any final thoughts?
Nope.